This is called The Red Shoes. In a cupboard in a house, a pair of discarded shoes rest ashamed in the top right-hand corner, underneath a paper bag filled with sanitary towels. Their shame is not because they're old or worn, or the wrong colour, or because they are too expensive or too cheap. It's because they're too small. A child of 9 remembers the week before when the shoes were bought for her. She remembers the shop assistant's hair full of harsh waves and the bright red lipstick that silted up the tiny gullies around her mouth. "How do they feel, love?" she asked her. The child hadn't answered. Instead, she'd looked down in wonder at the red shoes with the biscuit soles and the motif of flowers cut through the leather. Then her mother had said, "Do they fit?" And she nodded enthusiastically, a smile slowly filling her face. The child's mother stands at the sink washing runner beans, looking at the back garden. She wears a dress made of colourful printed fabric, made on a very old black sewing machine that is covered in belligerent bursts of gold lettering. It's operated by a wheel on its side, and when her mother turns it, her body rocks backwards and forwards in a violent dance. The mother stops washing the green beans and concentrates on humming to the radio. Buddy Holly is singing, and she likes Buddy Holly because he looks like a Canadian soldier she met once at a dance during the war, before she was married. When she sees the child's father come out of the shed into the garden, she turns down the radio, but still moves gently from side to side. The garden is where the green beans have been grown, along with radishes, onions, and cabbages. It's been a hot day, and although now it's cooler, the child's father takes off his shirt, and holding up his trousers is a thick black leather belt that is similar to the type that his father used to beat him and his brothers. A tattoo on his forearm, which says "Mother" and "won't fade," flinches with movement as he digs over the soil. He slows each movement, and when he does so, his body rises to muscle and then falls away again. The garden is useful for other things, not just growing vegetables. And when the child's brother, a boy 2 years older, has to be punished, he is made to weed the garden over and then dig it. He stands in an old pair of trousers which his mother has repaired for him beneath the sun or rain. Sometimes he works in the garden for a few hours or a day. Once he was there for a whole week. "Are you there?" the neighbour next door shouts. Between the houses is a brick wall, and because the neighbour is short and because the wall is tall, she has to stand on her tiptoes to speak to the mother. The child listens with some disinterest until she hears the words, "New shoes." And then, with enormous courage, she goes into the kitchen and stands at the table listening. "Do you like them?" The neighbour shows her new shoes. They are white with a small heel, and the toes are pert, and at each side of them there is a rose made of fabric. "I got them for the dance on Saturday." The dance is to be held for the workers of the car factory, where her husband works. Sometimes the neighbour asks the child's parents to go as well, but they can't go this year. Last year, the mother wore a black lurex dress, her body as plump as a pillow with wide, bouncy breasts, inflated the dress, and her pale, blotchy skin showed itself proudly at the low neckline. On her wrists and neck, she streaked her skin with scent the colour of pink milkshade that smelt of nice medicine. She's bought a bottle every Christmas by her husband. He gives it to the younger child and says, "Give this to your mother," and the child takes it. And the mother opens the unwrapped box and takes out the scent and places it on the table and lowers her eyes in thanks. The child decides to leave the kitchen, but as she does, she accidentally knocks the table and her mother turns round, looks at her, and then looks away. "Do you know anyone that wants a pair of shoes? They're brand new. She said they fitted." She pauses. "I'd want something for them." The shoes are made of red leather, a quietened red, one enriched if polish was iced over them thickly and left overnight and then shined in the morning. They are the type of shoes which look good on the first day back to school when the summer sun has layered the legs with a gorgeous grubbiness and the red shoes glisten like jewels against brand new white ankle socks. When a tin of black or brown polish is nearly empty and the remnants are difficult to scoop out, it's gently warmed on the stove and the polish melts on the floor of the tin and becomes covered in a thin, blind, perfectly round lake. This will never happen to the tin of red polish that has been bought specially and sits beside them. The child walks back into the living room and starts to play with her two teddy bears that are sitting on the settee. In a vertical line from their chins to their stomachs, there is an untidy stretch of stitching made while she was playing hospitals with her brother. "This teddy will die if we don't operate," her brother says to her with his laughing eyes. And with stolen scissors, their stomachs are cupped open and their stuffing taken out so they can be filled up again using old nylons that are ribbed with wear. When the child plays this game on her own, the teddy bears lay on beds of folded tea towels and their heads and paws are gently bandaged and the bears are served water in tiny cups from her tea set. The mother finishes her conversation at the back door and opens the cupboard and takes out the new shoes and places them onto the dining room table, even though it's been laid for dinner. Then she rushes back into the kitchen because she's heard a saucepan lid fall on the floor and thinks the beans are overboiling. The child sits and looks at the shoes. Then she looks away. When she looks back again, the shoes are still there. The father's silence comes in from the garden and sits at the table. Then the brother batters into the room, but caught in the drift of stillness, he rounds his shoulders and sits down. The father ignores the shoes, even though they nearly cover his fork. The child's mother brings the father's dinner, goes back into the kitchen for the others without realizing the shoes are still on the table. Everyone begins to eat except the father. The mother looks to see what the problem is and then, alarmed, puts the shoes in the sideboard. "Next door's wanted me and then the green beans boiled over," she says hurriedly, her words clattering onto the lino. Slowly and with great deliberation, the father picks up his knife and fork. Everyone eats in silence. Then a shout, a loud shout, is forced through an open window and pauses at the dinner table before dissipating. The children look at each other. Joan Sullivan, an older girl of 13 whose mother has just died and who lives opposite, is playing rounders with other children on the street and she wants to know if the child and her brother will join in. The child likes Joan, even though she won't play hospitals with her. "Ask to leave the table," their mother says to them. So they do and go outside. Joan Sullivan whacks the ball into the privet hedge of Mrs. Flynn, who has 8 children, and the scurry to retrieve the ball from her hedge makes the house restless and expels 3 of them, and they run onto the green to join in. Eventually, the night crowds in, and the children can't see the ball anymore and have to go home. As the child and her brother go into the house, the next door neighbour opens the door and shouts, "Tell your mum my sister's girl will have those shoes, and ask her what she wants for them." But neither the little girl nor her brother remember. Later, after the father has left for the night shift and the mother is baking for the next day, the child says to her mother, "Why does Linda Flynn have newspaper in her shoes?" The mother carefully spoons out the last of the cake mix and feeds it to her daughter. "Because they aren't the right size for her," she replies. "Can I see if my new shoes are the right size?" The mother turns on the tap to wash up and then notices a remnant of cake mix still left and scoops it up by sliding her finger around the mixing bowl and allows the child to lick it off. "All right then," she says. The child suddenly remembers what the neighbour said and realises this has to be done immediately. "Can I go now?" As soon as the front door is opened, the smell like a barrel of mouldy apples challenges her. Linda is the same age as her, but much prettier, and the fringe on her black, blunt hair is too long and gets caught up in her eyelashes. The hem on her skirt trails down and dark stains decorate the front of her blouse. "They're too small for me," she says. Linda Flynn takes off her shoes to show filthy feet and shattered toenails and tries on the new shoes excitedly. And she stands up in triumph and laughs with thanks and walks up and down, gathering up the hem of her dress so as to give herself wings. The house still smells of baking, and there is a plate of fairy cakes on the table. The child picks one up and eats it, and then she goes to the cupboard and looks inside. She turns to smile at her mother, who smiles back, and then the child sits on the settee in between her brother and her mother and takes another cake. Thank you.